The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show from the Uniden America Studios. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We appreciate it.
We do.
Now, this is really interesting. I'm amazed that this hasn't gotten more news, probably because the mainstream media wishes to stay away from it. Mm. Conservative media is covering this, but this is really pretty mind-boggling. Happened this week, especially with the radical transgender movement here in the United States and what broad support it still has inside the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
For people that don't know, the equity bill... Remember that did not pass. But remember, it did have the vast majority of support, like 99% support from all Democrats.
Right, right.
And the equity bill would be on the federal level, which would say that biological sex is basically the same as gender,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which of course is ridiculous. And the interesting thing is, this came out. This was Tuesday of this week. We just had the protest and everything else. We never got to it. The UK's National Health Services, that is the NHS. They control all health care in Great Britain, as
right.
You know. They have a nationalized health care system. The National Health Service will update its constitution to define sex as biological sex. The agency announced on Tuesday, we are defining sex as biological sex. The NHS states in a portion of their proposed changes to the Constitution that sets guidance about patients receiving intimate care from doctors of the same sex. The updated Constitution stressed the need for respecting the biological differences between men and women. If these J.K. Rowling has to just be going, you know, nuts on this one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If these biological differences are not considered or respected, there is a potential for unintended adverse health consequences, the new constitution stated. The new constitution also stressed the importance of clear language. The emphasis on clear language indicates a reversal of the 2021 NHS policy, which instructed medical practitioners to use terms like chest feeding in lieu of gender-specific terms like breastfeeding.
Right.
Previous NHS guidelines stated trans patients could be placed in wards based on their gender they identified with, according to the Telegraph.
Hmm.
The updated guidance now says patients should not have to share sleeping accommodations with patients of the opposite sex, and women in mental health units should have access to women-only spaces. Wow. And you know they've stopped all of the surgery or hormone treatments for children.
Right.
In Great Britain.
Which is good. I don't know how it got to the point of being allowed in the first place. But you look at the situation, it's the language of in the CDC here in the States changed during the Obama years and during the Trump years. They changed it back and said, look, it needs to be very clear. Because you're dealing with biology here. That's a word the left hates now. The party of science, by the way.
Hates biology.
They hate biology. And that was it. You know, you're talking about doctors and people working in labs and everything else. They need to know exactly what's going on. The terminology needs to be clear. And it's interesting what they're doing here at the NHS. And I think, you know, and a big difference, too, is that now you're looking, because they also provide the coverage, you know, the CDC here, at least not yet. They don't provide the coverage. They don't oversee that type of, you know, the hospital stays and everything else. And the NHS, they provide all of that. They have to oversee the entire infrastructure for healthcare there. So now they got to get down to, oh, well, wait, this ward here that is treating mental health, that needs to be women only. Stop the madness. It's very clear. The science isn't changing, and you're not going to change it.
No, and you're going to lose this. And we said eventually they would. We always said, and you're seeing it now. You're seeing it in Great Britain and to a smaller extent, but still growing extent in France also.
Yeah,
where they've come out against the hormone surgery the hormone treatments and the surgery for children, saying it's reprehensible what's going on, which we've always said it is. And the Democratic Party has been fully in support of that. So understand today, we've talked about it, and when we played the Frank Bruni thing about the protest today, where he laid it right on identity politics, which has been mainstreamed in the Democratic Party. That is the racism that has been become institutional and systemic inside the Democratic Party. Remember, in the summer of 2020, when you had the left saying racism is systemic in our society, we agreed with them, except we said, if you want to find where it is, go straight to the Democratic Party, where it's been institutionalized and is systemic,
right,
because it is a core of the belief of the mainstream Democrat in Congress today. And it's reprehensible that it is. And the same thing with the radical transgender movement that has been institutionalized inside the Democratic Party. The radical agenda is mainstream in the Democratic Party. And it's interesting that all these things, you know, just came about today with those news items.
Well, and you know, too, when you talk about the science is the science, the left wants to change the science, thinks they can change the science by changing the terminology. And you can't do that. Blur the lines by changing the words. You can't do that.
Yep. Doesn't work.
And at the CDC, when Trump came in, they looked at this and they said, look, women don't have prostates. So we can't, we're just not, you're not going to change that. And the left would shout back through their protesting voice. Some women do. No, exactly zero women do. Men living as women might, but they're men. And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at Motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
You know, I think it was, we were working together, and I believe it was a great Britain newspaper.
Mm.
Remember when it came out?
Oh,
First pregnant man.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the British tabloids that started it. Isn't it interesting that it's the British government?
Yeah.
That is now saying,
no, that's a great point.
Stop that, because that was where you and I shook our heads going, there is the first pregnant man out there.
It was like they were going to have a parade or something.
I know.
I mean, they were really, and by the way, most of society looked at it and said, no.
They were so proud.
No, they really were. They were so proud.
Like, this is as if
they had changed science.
Right, I know.
That's the whole point. You know, they go through it and then, well, we'll just change the terminology at the CDC. We'll just change the way that things operate at the NHS. We'll just change everything, and then you can't ignore, you know, what are they going to call it? The new science?
Well, what it's come down to is we have stated, and we go back to when Tom Cotton was interviewing the professor from Berkeley, just about 2 years ago. Because I think it was the summer of 21.
Mm.
And he was asking questions about the whole transgender movement and about, you know, men getting pregnant.
Yeah.
And she said, this line of questioning is transphobic. He goes, what are you talking about? I'm trying to find out what you believe. Yes. And you, just by answering these questions, are making it so that, don't you understand, the transgenders have one of the highest attempted and suicide rates in the country.
Right.
And Cotton's like, so you're saying that I can't tell the truth because somebody might commit suicide? That's the argument of the left. That's what it is.
And no regard, no care at all for the mental health issues at hand here. They don't want to address it.
None. Nope. It's simply we push the narrative.
Think about that. What would drive you in knowing, admitting, even promoting that mental health issue? It is a real crisis within that demographic.
Yeah.
And you say to them, well, shouldn't that be addressed? No, just addressing it is bigoted. No, it's not. Going out of your way to carry your agenda torch and ignoring it is dangerous and shows you don't give a damn about anybody involved. You care about you.
And so you want to do experimental surgery and hormone treatment on children,
having
no idea of the consequences of what might happen because of it.
Right.
So who are the uncaring SOBs?
I mean, it's every day that they're showing that. Every day that is on full display of how much they actually don't care.
Yeah.
This virtue signaling, you know, when you do that all the time, the world is eventually going to get around to inspecting your virtues and seeing if it really holds up. And it turns out it doesn't.
And that's what you're getting from Great Britain and France now, that, you know, this whole thing of gender reassignment surgery and hormone treatment for children is sadistic and cruel and evil and unhealthy. And they didn't care. They didn't. All that mattered was the narrative. They have no compassion. No. They have no caring. Nope. There's no kindness involved in here. There's no gentleness involved in here. It's about pushing a narrative. For what reason? For what reason? Pushing a completely unscientific narrative for what end goal?
Yeah, what's the trophy here?
Because the end goal has been the reversal completely in Great Britain. And now, because that's what you're getting, what we've got to, and France saying this is barbaric what we're doing, and it will soon be here in the United States, and we'll know the truth about the barbarism of these people who wish to take people that clearly have mental issues, ignore the problem, promote the fact that all society should lie. And if you don't lie, they might commit suicide. And therefore, we need to do sadistic medical procedures on children is just beyond anything. And all of a sudden, Great Britain woke up and France is waking up going, What the hell are we doing here? And the United States, with full support of the Democratic Party, still moving forward on this insanity.
Wait until the lawsuits hit big time.
Yeah, we said that. What's going to change DEI? What's going to change this? What's going to change protest on campuses and everything is lawsuits.
Yep.
You know, the thing is, Bragg, they can't figure out whether Bragg's going to charge the rioters now. Well, that's just going to add to people saying, we don't want to go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that story coming up next. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
A supply chain resilience meeting earlier this week in Georgia gave participants such as U.S. Trade Representative's Office Chief Ag Negotiator Doug McCaleb opportunity to discuss resiliency in the wake of the Key Bridge collapse at the mouth of the Port of Baltimore.
We certainly are very appreciative of how all the ports on the East Coast have bound together to be able to handle the disruption from the Port of Baltimore being closed. I can't underscore how vital that has been for our economy and for a lot of parts of agriculture, including farm machinery, fertilizer, and even sugar and soybeans as well.
The ambassador, recently speaking to farm broadcasters in Washington, D.C., updated progress in removing debris and clearing up channel space for barge and cargo ship traffic, including this past weekend.
The first container ship came through.
With the goal of two-way vessel traffic in and out of the Port of Baltimore to come online by the end of this month. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, and he's Eric Carlin, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, stories out yesterday whether the UCLA protesters and rioters will be charged with anything.
Mm.
Then yesterday on Wednesday, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, we wondered, is he the one that's over it? He is. Mm. Refused to say whether he will prosecute the pro-Palestinian rioters who broke into and took over Hamilton Hall at Columbia University. Bragg currently prosecuting Trump, as we know, on the bogus charges. He was unresponsive to inquiries from the Daily Caller regarding potential charges for the pro-terrorist rioters arrested on Tuesday. The New York Police Department arrested 119 rioters at Columbia University on Tuesday evening, as well as 173 at the City University of New York. Given his track record and political nature of the events, I would be surprised if the Manhattan District Attorney's Office prosecuted the charges in any serious manner, said Cornell Law School professor William Jacobson. Told the Daily Caller the charges are likely to be dropped against most perpetrators and drastically reduced for others under an agreement that would see the charges eventually expunged. In New York City, unfortunately, this type of weak prosecution agenda encourages more crime, Jacobson continued. Manhattan attorney Martin Stoller told the New York Times Tuesday that protesters are unlikely to face jail time. Think about that. You go in and part of a riot, you take over a building, you ransack the building, you don't do any jail time. New York Deputy Commissioner Kaz Daughtry said during a press conference Tuesday that potential charges could include burglary in the third degree, criminal mischief, and trespassing for students inside Hamilton Hall, and trespassing and disorderly conduct for those in the encampments outside. The decision to bring the charges ultimately is up to the district attorney. So we know it was done. We know the know it was done in the, in all those particular cases. Mm-hmm. And again, the putting police officers in harm's way.
Right.
According to Stoller, the rioters could face charges ranging from disorderly conduct to second-degree criminal mischief. The latter carries a potential maximum jail sentence of 7 years, and trespassing carries a maximum sentence of 90 days in jail. However, he told the New York Times, those charges are unlikely. Protesters could face more serious consequences if evidence is found that they carried weapons or an explosive device into the building, Mr. Stoller said, or if they committed any violent assaults, Class B felonies that carry a penalty of between 5 and 25 years in jail. Such outcomes, though, are unlikely. You and I talked about this. Remember, it was Bragg who actually said and wanted to have the policy that if you committed an armed robbery with a gun but did not pull the trigger, you would not face a felony.
Yeah, that same guy.
Same guy.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Uniden America Studios.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I wonder if Bragg doesn't bring charges, whether Mayor Adams is going to be angry and do his flag speech again. Nobody takes down a flag here. Well, you know, when you're involved in the destruction of your own city, how patriotic are you?
Right.
Somebody's got to ask that question, right?
Yeah.
If you're helping to destroy your own city economically and by not being tough on crime and defunding the police, then how patriotic are you? Is America, rah, 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 don't touch that flag. That flag means destruction of a city to me. What the hell's going to be? It's like, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Well, it's, you know, it's... it's the least he could do, and by that I mean it's actually
the least he could do.
Yeah. You know, it's not really doing anything. You're doing everything to destroy your city, and then you pretend to jump on the bandwagon of, oh, no, don't you dare.
Don't you dare. Yeah. Don't you dare touch that flag.
Right.
Just destroy the quality of life for the citizens of our city.
Exactly. Over and over again.
How about do both?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
just a thought.
Well,
just a thought.
You know, I mean, jumping on is something for the moment. It's you know, here's the thing: you can do that after you've done your job. Go do your job for your city, then come back and say, "Hey, nobody does that here because you've earned it."
All right, so. We didn't get to this this week, and I at least want to get to a little bit of some of the testimony. The Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government held a hearing on Wednesday, okay? The hearing was to examine the Biden White House and their role in censorship. And so Robert Flaherty, former assistant to the president and director of digital strategy at the Biden White House, was actually the lead witness. Then you had Andy Slavitt, former senior advisor to the Biden White House COVID-19 response team, Todd Zwicky, professor of the Scalia Law School, and Matthew Sigelman, fellow Constitutional Law Center at Stanford Law School, about censorship in the government. Most of this is the back and forth between Jim Jordan and Robert Flaherty, the former assistant to the president and director of digital strategy, which means digital strategy is what is on social media. And,
right. Yeah.
You know, and he was the right hand man of the president there. And so what you'll notice again is how nobody in this administration, excuse my language, nobody in this administration will answer a damn question ever. You can't get it. I mean, Ukraine Jean-Pierre. Oh, my God. Her xenophobia answer. Why did the president call Japan xenophobic?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Her trying to get around that. And I will say this. They keep asking, you know, they're saying, well, you really didn't answer the question. Well, here's my response. Well, that's the same answer you just gave before.
That's the best I could do.
That didn't answer the question. Here's the question. Sorry, that's the best I can do. That's how I'll answer the question.
Right. This is the best way to answer
it. It's
your
getting
question.
To be blunt, basically. I'm not going to answer your questions.
I don't have any other version. That's the version that's in this big book.
Right. So,
yeah.
But here's some of the back and forth yesterday on misinformation, disinformation, and they get into it. And of course, I don't know. I can't tell you anything.
Mr. Flaherty, when the Biden administration told Americans that the vaccinated couldn't get the virus, were they guessing or lying?
By the way, fair question.
Yeah.
Because it was wrong.
Mm. Right.
That's a fair question.
Yep.
Were you guessing or were you lying?
Right. Got to be one of the two.
Right. Is there a third option?
Right.
Well, we were guessing because we wanted people to get the vaccine. Okay, so you were guessing.
Yeah, right.
So you didn't know. Were you lying? Did you know it was false and still did it anyway so people would get the vaccination?
You knew or you didn't, right. So that means you either were guessing or you lied.
And since this is the administration that's accusing the other side of constant disinformation and misinformation, it's an important question to ask. Here we go.
Congressman, I think first of all, it's important to remember my role in this discussion, which is as a communicator on behalf of
you. You work for the Biden administration, you're assistant to the president. It's a simple question. When they told the American people that if you get the vaccine, you will not get the virus, was that a guess or was that a lie?
Congressman, we were communicating on behalf of the administration. We were communicating the best information provided by some of the best medical scientists in the world in Atlanta, Bethesda, and beyond.
Let me ask you a simple question. Can the people who got the vaccine, could they still get the virus?
Congressman, again, I'm not here as a medical expert.
No, that's just common. Everyone knows that. Of course they can. I'm just asking you a simple question. Well, let me do it this way. What's the definition of misinformation?
Congressman, certainly there's different and varying definitions of mis and disinformation. At the end of the day, the platform.
Tell me the difference. Tell me what misinformation is.
Congressman, these are decisions that the platforms ultimately get to make about how they...
I'm not asking that. I'm a simple question. What's misinformation?
Well, Congressman, I think it's important in the context of these...
How about you, Professor? Can you tell me what misinformation is?
I assume it would be saying something was completely untrue.
Saying something that's untrue, but with no intent. No intent. Disinformation, this is what all the misinformation experts tell us. Misinformation, saying something that's not accurate. Disinformation, saying something that's not accurate with the intent to mislead. Right?
That sounds right to me.
You agree, Mr. Seligman? That's the common definition in the misinformation industry out there?
Yes, my understanding.
Okay, that's the definition. So now, Mr. Flaherty, how about this question? When the Biden administration told the American people that the vaccinated couldn't get the virus, was it misinformation or disinformation?
Congressman, again, we were communicating the best medical research that we had at the time on behalf of a group of some of the best doctors in the world in Atlanta and Bethesda.
When the Biden administration told the American people that the virus didn't come from a lab, was that misinformation or disinformation?
Congressman, again, I can't speak to discussions that were had on that topic. It's been a couple of years, but again, generally...
The White House put pressure on us to censor the lab leak theory. This was something the White House cared about, so much so that Facebook was having, the top people at Facebook were having a group discussion on it. So I'm just asking, when they said that, was that misinformation or disinformation?
Congressman, I can't recall the specific example.
When the Biden administration said that masks work, was that misinformation or disinformation?
Again, Congressman, we were communicating the best research at the time, but I also believe that that was a discussion that began in the previous administration as well.
How about what Professor Zawicki brought up, Mr. Flaherty, when the White House said there was no such thing as natural immunity? Was that misinformation or disinformation?
Again, Congressman, I am not a medical expert, and my job was to communicate on behalf of a team of medical experts.
So you weren't a medical expert, but you could suggest to Facebook that they needed to change their algorithm so that the American people would not see stuff from the Daily Wire. They'd only see stuff from the New York Times. You can do that. But you can't tell me if they were guessing or lying when they said something that was absolutely not true.
Well, again, Congressman, my role was as a communicator on behalf of the best information available. And the role of the platforms was to have a set of policies that they enforced on their own. And that, you know, my engagement with them had, you know, no bearing on what they're
doing. No bearing? No bearing?
Well, Congressman, again,
third day. Who's Clark Humphrey?
Clark Humphrey was the digital director for the COVID.
Did you work with her?
Yes, Congressman, I did.
Part of the White House operation in the same area, right? You worked with her?
Congressman, she worked in a similar area.
Yeah, okay. And when she said on the third day the Biden administration wanted to flag the below tweet, wondering if you can get moving on the process for having it removed ASAP. That's not trying to impact what the platforms do. That's not telling the platform what kind of speech can be out there.
Congressman, again, we had the ability to flag whatever we wanted, and the platforms had an ability to say no. I can't speak to whether or not they took any action on the particular.
Well, no, if they said no, they get the President of the United States says Facebook's killing people. They obviously felt the pressure. That's why they're having that group text conversation. How about this one? When the Biden administration told the American people the border is secure, was that misinformation or disinformation?
Congressman, again, I'm here to discuss my engagements with social media platforms.
I'm just asking. You were in the Biden administration when these kind of statements were being made. How about this one? When the Biden administration said the Inflation Reduction Act will actually reduce inflation, was that misinformation or disinformation?
Congressman, again, I'm here to discuss my interactions with social media companies.
Let me go back to the first question in the last 13 seconds. Any chance you'll answer one question for me? When the Biden administration told the American people that the vaccinated couldn't get the virus, were they guessing or lying?
Congressman, we were communicating on behalf of the best medical research.
But the question would be, was it the best? How did you know it was the best medical research? Because it was completely wrong. Was there any medical research that actually said that?
It would have to have been proven wrong. Right? If it's wrong, how do you know it? It's, you know, this entire thing is, it gets down to the clear lying about it all. And this stupid game. Can anyone answer a question up there?
No. That's the most frustrating thing is you can bring on, how many people have we played over the last year and who from the Biden administration that actually answered a question that was asked of the thousands of probably over the last couple of years audio cuts that we have played of members of the Biden administration up there. I'm trying to think of one case.
Austin did.
That's right. We played that earlier this
week. I was surprised. Yeah, Matt Gaetz was as surprised.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz. That's right.
It was kind of shocking because you could see the way that Matt Gaetz, after he said it.
You're right. That's great. Austin was. He did.
And Matt Gaetz was like, whoa. And then he was just kind of his tempo picked up after that. Matt Gaetz, asking him about Gaza. You know,
because
are the troops going to be fired upon those building the pier that were there? Pretty good chance they're going to be fired upon, right? Yep.
Yeah, but then at the end, he didn't answer the how he tried to get out of it. So would that be considered boots on the ground? No. So you're saying if you're on a pier that's connected to the ground
right.
and shooting goes back and forth, that those aren't boots on the ground.
Boots on a pier
right.
that is connected to the ground, are those boots on the ground? No.
And he goes, that would be correct. They're not boots on the ground.
No, they're not boots on the ground.
It's boots on the ground adjacent.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just
boots on a pier. It's just insanity, but I was shocked that he answered that first question. Matt Gaetz was.
Yeah, he was.
I thought to myself, man, That was a huge misstep by Austin. Doesn't he know, as a part of the administration, you never answer a question? But that was the only one. And you hear this dance that he's doing there. Well, Congressman, if I knew you could do that, I would have done that all through high school when my mom asked me anything. Well, Mrs. Harley, if you want to get into the question about the homework, I think we need to just break down what homework really is. I am at home. There is work being done. When you ask me, Mrs. Harley, about brushing my teeth, there is a brush in that area, that specific area, which is designated for brushing teeth and also brushing other things. There is a brush. There are also teeth that are often in that same space, and we can talk about whether those teeth have been brushed and within what time frame, I think, would be the most important part of that. And we can break down the time frames. What is 24 hours based on your thought, and what is my opinion of 24 hours? They can vary. That, by the way, there's the other thing, too.
I may punch you if you don't stop right? this.
Well, Mr. McNamara, you know, the question is, you know, do you throw a punch? Do you deliver a punch? Who receives the punch? Where does the punch go? Is it a punch line? Was that a punch line? That's the question.
I really wish I had a punch sound effect right now.
because
I'd use it.
And there's the frustration of you can't answer the question because you can't be honest.
Yeah.
The truth isn't, you know, it's some, if you're lying about something and you've been lying about something and you don't want people to see the truth, man, you got to really work hard. And that's what you see there. They're working hard.
I'm not lying. It's my truth.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It depends on Mrs. Harley what you call the truth. Your version of the truth and my version of the truth may be different. If I said that to my mom,
it'd be more than a punch sound effect.
She wouldn't need sound effects.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. See what happens when you make sure that the American flag goes up?
Yeah.
And another country's flag comes down. What do they raise that frat, like the GoFundMe, for over $400,000?
Yeah.
For a party? And I guess John Rich also said he'll be part of he'll play at the party.
Right. Yeah. That was greatness. They raised the money. They hit the goal fast on that one. Defending that American flag. That was great. That was really great. Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.